Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Wednesday, January 28th, welcome, 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 friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. Since the 1990s, Chester, Pennsylvania, has been home to a facility that burns trash and turns it into energy. It's the largest facility of its kind in the country. However, it has all sorts of harmful side effects, according to researchers and the folks who live there. And here in Philadelphia, we send about a third of our trash, our municipal trash, to this facility in Chester. There's a bill now in City Council that would stop that practice, that would divert, most likely, that trash to a landfill instead of an incinerator. Today, we're going to dive into the debate over what Philadelphia does with its trash. We're going to hear from a resident of Chester. We're going to hear from a city council member who is proposing that legislation I referenced earlier. And we are going to hear from a researcher who can tell us more about the incineration process and why it is harmful to human and environmental health. Our question for you this hour, what should Philadelphia do with its trash, incinerator or landfill? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org.
Yeah, and I'm really excited because I don't know a lot about landfills either. And so we're going to do a bit of a question and answer session about that. I mean, is it any better than incinerators? We don't know. So we're going to talk about it. Again, questions of the day. What should Philadelphia do with its trash, incinerator or landfill? 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. Hope we hear from some folks. So, trio of news stories.
Start us off.
Yeah, Philadelphia council members, two of them, they are proposing two pieces of legislation that would push back against federal ICE authority by putting restrictions on what agents can do in city limits. The first bill would ban federal immigration authorities from wearing masks or using unmarked vehicles in the cities. There are certain exceptions, like undercover operations. It would also prevent agents from using city property as staging areas for their operations or from entering certain city-owned spaces like libraries or shelters without a judicial warrant. The second bill would codify the city's longstanding sanctuary policy, which basically means that Philadelphia law enforcement does not cooperate with ICE by pulling aside folks or holding people in jails if they have immigration violations. And this is part of a broader pushback locally by our elected officials in the aftermath of the shooting of Rene Good and Alex Preddy, who both died in Minneapolis. Pennsylvania Democratic House delegation, they wrote to Senators Fetterman and McCormick. They asked them to vote against DHS funding. Senator Fetterman, Avi, we talked about this. He's issued two statements. He's spoken out against DHS, called for Secretary Kristi Noem to be fired, but he has said he will not vote for a shutdown. But we've heard a number of officials sort of speak out and take a stand against ICE and what they perceive as an overreach.
Including a district attorney, Larry Krasner, who has now formed this coalition with eight other progressive prosecutors around the country. They say they're going to work together to prosecute federal immigration agents who do illegal things in their municipalities. No idea how that would work since nothing's happened yet. They are calling this working group Fight Against Federal Overreach. The acronym of that, you might notice, is FAFO. I'll let you make your own conclusions on that.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, from what we've seen in Minneapolis, the turning point there was not what local officials did. It's what people did.
Yeah.
What citizens did in response. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine if we're in a similar scenario here in Philadelphia, it would be the same thing.
Yeah. And we, and by the way, there have been marches here in solidarity with the people of Minnesota who, of course, spent a lot of time in the streets. There's currently protests outside of Target stores. There was protests outside of the federal immigration center here, but they were trying to block the cars not just days ago. So there has been this, you know, solidarity marches all over the country.
Story number two now. Some local community colleges are being targeted by scammers who create so-called ghost students to steal financial aid. interesting investigation here by our news partners at 6ABC, who looked at the local impact of what is apparently a national problem. These scammers use stolen Social Security numbers and other personal data to create fake students. Those students fake enroll and then apply for grants and loans. The money is routed to accounts controlled by the scammers, and then, like ghosts, the fake students disappear. 6ABC found that Delaware County Community College and Community College of Philadelphia have been victimized by these scammers. In 2023, Delaware County had more than 500 ghost students enrolled. CCP said in 2025, about 5% of its total applications were fraudulent. And scammers target these community colleges specifically because they have an open enrollment system, so it's easier to pull off the scam.
Yeah, what stood out to me is that these scammers have stolen tens of millions of taxpayer dollars. And this is crazy because there are young people who actually need this financial aid money. They're also stealing people's identities. So there's another harm going on there. And they also are making it hard for schools because a community college of Philadelphia had to pay back like $600,000 in aid that they paid out to these scammers. So that's money that doesn't go to students. They also took spots in classes. These ghosts had the, and so other students trying to get in a class couldn't get in because there's a ghost sitting in the seat. And so all of this is, of course, prompting the Department of Education to increase its fraud detection, which means it could make it be harder for people to apply for FAFSA funding
that's
and all
concern.
Those things. And so it could mean that other people may have a harder time getting a real person may have a harder time getting access to financial aid. And that's very important. As somebody who has financial aid, you need that money and you need it quickly.
Yeah. And I think that would be the concern. Like, you want to crack down, you want to detect fraud at the same time. When you create obstacles in any process, especially a process as complicated as financial aid, you're going to deter people. That's just a fact of life. That's sort of basic behavioral economics, right? Make something easier, people are more likely to do it. Make it hard, they're less likely to do it. And especially when you're talking about community college, you're really trying to open the doors for people. That's why open enrollment exists. You don't want to crack down so hard that you know, in some ways, dilute the mission of the school. So I do think it's a tricky balance.
And by the way, 6ABC, great investigation. And a lot of these scammers are using artificial intelligence. So we could even talk about that aspect of it. So many things that bubble to the surface on this story.
AI ghosts.
So third story, Amazon announced this week that it will close all of its Amazon Go and Amazon Fresh stores. All of the stores except the California ones, they will close by February 1st. So in just a few days, Amazon says the new goal will be to focus on its grocery delivery, Whole Foods market, and new supersized store concept. If you recall, if you live in Philadelphia downtown, Amazon just opened an Amazon Fresh location at 5th and Spring Garden back in August. So that will now close. And so that it hasn't even been open 6 months. And according to the Associated Press, some of the 57 Amazon Fresh stores and the 15 Go locations, they'll be converted to Whole Food Market stores. And of course, they want to do more delivery. But I was kind of stunned. I've gone there, you know, had my groceries put into my trunk for me by the Amazon Fresh people. And I kind of liked it. And I'm like, now it's gone.
So apparently there are six of these stores around the region that'll close down. I've never been in one. What makes it different than a supermarket?
Well, they have these dash carts, which uses technology where you can scan and put your stuff in the bags and you don't even have to go to checkout. You just put your things in bags as you shop, put them in there and walk right on out. You can also use the Amazon app, order your groceries, and they'll put them in your car for you at a specific time.
Right.
It's just very convenient. Also, they have things that are very cheap. Like, you could get, spaghetti sauce for 97 cents. So they had
very
like
specific,
weird things.
97 cents.
There were like certain things that were like super cheap.
Right.
And you were just like, 97 cents for some Prego? You know, it was just very, it would stand out. So that's it. But they said that, look, you know, they saw the growth in their grocery delivery and they saw the growth in people wanting to go to Whole Foods. So that's what they're going to focus on.
Grocery store market, tough to crack, man. People are loyal.
They really
are. To their Acmes, to their
Giants. It was never packed. I will say that the few times that I went to the Amazon Fresh, I've never seen it packed.
Wow.
Whereas you go to Acme,
Ghost Grocery Carts,
or one of the other places, you know, packed.
Our producer Andrea says Aldi forever. People do love Aldi. Another one I'm not
familiar with. I like Aldi, too.
I go to Acme mostly. Anyways.
Acme.
I go to Acme mostly. But it is very close to my house.
Yeah.
So today on the show, we are talking about a controversy that's been simmering for a long time in our region. Mm-hmm. It hinges on the fact that Philadelphia sends a third of its municipal trash to an incinerator in Chester. And that has real consequences for the people living in Chester. Mm-hmm. A city council member who we're going to talk to shortly has proposed a bill that would stop that practice. We want to hear from you today. What should Philadelphia do with its trash, incinerator, or landfill? Call 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. YouTube, Facebook. Drop a comment in the chat. And don't go anywhere. We'll be right back on Studio 2.
And welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. Philadelphia sends about a third of its trash to an incinerator in the city of Chester, the Delaware Valley Resource Recovery Facility owned by ReWorld. The ReWorld incinerator sits along the Delaware River and is the largest waste-to-energy incinerator in the country. But there are growing calls to shut it down.
Yeah, opponents of the plant say it emits harmful pollution and hinders economic development in the city. But ReWorld says it provides electricity to 50,000 homes and diverts trash from landfills. And now there's a bill in Philadelphia City Council that would ban Philly from sending its waste to incinerators.
Today, we're going to talk about that new bill in City Council and about the Chester facility, how it's impacting residents, and how it compares to other waste management options like landfills. But before we start, we want to make sure we understand the basics of how incinerators work. And to do that, we've got Sintana Vergara with us. She's an assistant professor of engineering at Swarthmore College. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yes, and for you, our listeners at home, on the road, and elsewhere, our questions of the day are this. What should Philadelphia do with its trash? Should we send it to incinerators? Should we send it to landfills? Or is there another alternative? You can give us a call, 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, share the video, but leave your comments in the chat.
So let's do a quick incinerator 101, Sintana. So what happens to trash when it goes to an incinerator like this one in Chester? How is it burned, and then what's emitted?
Sure. So incineration is controlled combustion. You basically have a plant, waste is going in, you're adding air to it, and then you're burning the waste. And so when you burn the waste, you have a bunch of air pollutants that are emitted. These can be partially cleaned as they go through the stacks, and then you also get ash produced. And the useful thing that comes out is electricity.
Are there any pollutants that come out that are concerning that may not get caught by the filtration system?
Yes. So whenever you have combustion, you are always going to have air pollutants produced. Always. So some that you might have heard of, particulate matter. These are these fine particles that are particularly concerning for human health. Also a class of particles called SOx, S-O-X, and NOx. NOx is a precursor to ozone, which also has some important public health impacts. But another class of pollutants that's particularly concerning are called dioxins. Mm-hmm. And these are these persistent and bioaccumulating organic pollutants that basically don't break down in the environment. And we know that they have very harmful effects on human health. They are carcinogens, for example.
And what are the documented health effects of living near an incinerator like this one? And when we say near, how near do you have to be to feel those health effects most likely?
Yeah, that's a good question. So documented health effects, basically we have studies from all over the world, from any place that has combustion. So any industrial source, including incinerators, are going to have health impacts. And the closer you live to it, of course, the impacts are going to be larger. But we know that there's a variety of health impacts on asthma, respiratory disease. And to me, what's also very concerning are potentially increased rates of cancer due to dioxins.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Sintana. You're going to be back later this hour to discuss the pros and cons of incinerators versus landfills and other waste options. We thank you so much for your time here at the top of the show.
Thank you.
And so now we want to talk about the Stop Burning Trash bill that's before Philadelphia City Council. Council member Jamie Gauthier, a Democrat who represents Philadelphia's 3rd District, introduced that bill, and she joins us live in the studio. Welcome, Council member Gauthier.
Hi, Cherry. Hi, Avi. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. Also with us is Zulene Mayfield. She's the driving force behind the advocacy group Chester Residents Concerned for Quality Living and has been a key voice for environmental justice in Chester. Zulene Mayfield, welcome to the program.
Hi. Hi, everybody.
Yeah, thanks so much for being here. And so, Councilmember, we wanted to start with you. Just tell us the basics of the Stop Burning Trash bill. Like, what would it do and how would it impact Chester?
Sure. Well, I want to start by honoring Ms. Zulene Mayfield, who really set the groundwork for all of this for decades. And so that's why we're here and that's why all of this is happening. But the Stop Trashing Our Air Act is a bill that essentially would ban Philadelphia from contracting with trash incineration companies like Covanta / ReWorld in the management of our waste. Mm-hmm.
Zulene, I want to ask, first of all, how did this issue come on your radar? And give us a little bit of the timeline of your advocacy around this and what the journey has been like to get just to this point.
Well, you know, I got involved because I was able to buy my first home. Unbeknownst to me, that first home was directly across the street from some construction that was happening. At the time, they told us that it was, they've had many different names for what they do. Never were we told that it was an incinerator. Mm-hmm. We were told that it was a trash to steam facility. Well, at the time, nobody knew exactly what that meant. We're talking about in 1989, 90. So as the construction went on, and, you know, we organized or we became aware by everything that we could see, hear, and smell. We had no idea about the pollutants. All we knew was that our community was changing. There were hundreds and hundreds of trash trucks that rolled through our little tree-lined, porch-lined street going into this facility. They would come down the streets and 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning and just park and idle the trucks. And there were all different types of trucks. The trucks you normally see picking up your trash trucks, but primarily they were 18-wheelers.
Wow.
That were coming into the community. We knew at that time that we had a problem. And we organized, like I said, on everything you could see, hear, and smell around this trash to steam facility. And we were told that the air that came out of the stack was no different from what you experienced while taking a shower. And we all knew that it was a lie. We knew that, okay, well, if that was the case, you would see these things everywhere. So the community, we started having meetings and we organized. They went online and started burning trash in 1991. Circle, or Chester Residents Concerned for Quality Living, formed officially in 1992.
Mm. Yeah. And what does it smell like, by the way? What is the smell?
Actually, if you come up I-95, when you get up to the Chichester exit, you can actually smell the garbage.
Yeah.
You can smell a sense of burning. You could smell burning plastic. And when you live in the community, It's embarrassing because you cannot have anybody over your house because the smell is choking.
Yeah,
you are environmentally assaulted by the smells and the odors that come from that facility.
And Ms. Zulene, I got to ask you this. What has been the impact? Because you lived there for many years and you moved away. What has been the impact on the Chester community since this incinerator has been in operation? What, just give us the facts, the health impacts.
We've had everything from rashes to consistent nosebleeds, mm-hmm. To people just dying. This past July, we buried a 38-year-old man. from a rare form of cancer that his doctors deemed came from environmental exposure.
There are lots of other types of industrial facilities in Chester. It's a high concentration of industrial facilities. And someone pushing back on this might say, well, why not go after those facilities as opposed to this one, since this one, at the very least, has the positive benefit of creating energy? What would you say to that skeptic?
Okay, well, you know, listen, at one time, Chester was an industrial zone, okay? We did shipbuilding. Anything that was manufactured in Chester. There have been other waste polluting facilities that have tried to come to Chester, and this organization, in one way or another, has defeated them. We fought off three tire burning proposals, including a proposal by Kimberly Clark or manufacturers of Scott Paper Company to burn tires as fuel for their industry. We've had the largest autoclaver of infectious chemotherapeutic medical waste located right next to the incinerator. We fought them. You name it, we fought it, including what would have been the country's largest pet crematory that tried to come to Chester. They are not there because of this organization. But by far, the incinerator has been the most polluting in terms of particulate matter, dioxins, arsenic, mercury, lead, cadmium, you name it. And when you rank them, they are even over top of the airport, the number one polluter in particulate matter and other pollutants in our region.
Ms. Dulina, you know, this bill that Councilmember Jamie Gauthier has introduced is only, you know, one city stopping the trash going to Chester. There are still other cities. I want you to react to this bill, first of all, to Philadelphia, because this is a major win for your organization. But also, what about the other cities? Because it doesn't seem like the trash burning is going to stop, even if this bill passes.
Well, you know, that's one person's opinion. We have a different perspective. We have already been in contact and actually got Delaware County and the Delaware County Solid Waste Authority. They are right now on a diversion to make it, every year they're going to divert a certain amount of their trash away from incineration, with the plan being that in 3 years they will 100% no longer send any of their waste to the incinerator to be burned. We are in contact with New York City, particularly Queens and Manhattan. That's where the bulk of the trash from New York comes from. We are on constant meetings with them to get them to also reevaluate their contract and stop sending their garbage to our community to poison us. The bill is a very bold step, and it's a bold step in the right direction, because the misnomer is that only the people in Chester are being polluted. No, that's not true. The pollution does not stop at the borders of Chester. The entire region, Philadelphia region, of which we are in, is what they call a non-attainment area, which means we don't have good air. We are always consistently rated either a D or F in terms of air quality. Yeah. The children in Philadelphia, as well as the children in Chester, 28% of the children in Chester have asthma. There's also a high rate of geriatric asthma that is occurring in our population. That is going to continue.
So do you feel like this is a tipping point, this bill? Is this bill in your mind a tipping point in your activism?
It's not a tipping point. This is a win. It would be a win for all of us that have lungs. It's not just going to help us. Yeah. If you breathe, you will benefit from this bill.
Yeah.
But people have to have the courage
Yeah.
Let me ask.
You know, it's different to do something that's uncomfortable. People like to do things that are comfortable, even if it's wrong. And they talk about electricity that they generate. That electricity has never benefited the residents that live in the city of Chester. Mm-hmm. At one point, they used to ship it over to the grid, and it fueled the casinos in Atlantic City. So what benefit is that to us?
Yeah. Let me read in a couple comments from our listeners. Emily says, stop sending trash to be incinerated. For now, we should use landfills, but we need to work to decrease our trash by more recycling and composting, as well as working to eliminate single-use products. We can't keep making our neighbors sick.
Yeah.
That's Emily's comment. Lou says, maybe we could find a neighborhood where white people live to build an incinerator. I bet then a solution will turn up quickly. Mm-hmm. I want to turn back to you, Councilmember Jamie Gauthier, about what the plan would be if this bill passes. So now I have a third of municipal waste here in Philadelphia that doesn't have somewhere to go. Where do you imagine it would go?
We know that there's landfill capacity. So we actually have two contracts in the city of Philadelphia for waste management. One goes to a company called Waste Management. Mm-hmm. They take about 60% of our trash, and that goes to landfills that they own. The other is this contract that ReWorld/Covanta has had for the past 7 years. We know that there are other companies, Republic for one, who has a lot of interest in this contract and who does have landfill capacity. And no, that's
and
not...
And where are those landfills located?
They are in another part of the state, but not in a place that is as near to where people live. And one thing that we know is that, you know, there's a report stating that incineration is 23 times more harmful for people's health if they live around an incinerator. And so the landfills are not as in proximity to where people live. And so while not a perfect solution, it's a fine solution for now.
By the way, Stan comments, I am all for eliminating incinerating Philly's trash in Chester and anywhere else, but Philly City Council needs to tie this legislation with increasing funding for recycling and banning as much single-use plastic as reasonably possible, so that we generate less trash for landfills. Just your thoughts on, you know, I mean, the problem is the volume of waste. And I know this is one solution, right, to deal with this issue of incineration. But any thoughts to increasing our recycling or trying to reduce what we send or eventually will send to those landfills?
Absolutely. And I think I know Stan. Stan is a great advocate. I agree with him. We need to be heading towards zero waste as a city. So at this point, I think we're recycling about 12% of our waste, something like that. We need to have more education so that people can recycle more and recycle appropriately. We need to do whatever we need to do as a city to accommodate more recycling. I would love for us to have a citywide composting initiative. I've talked to local composting companies like Bennett who are very interested in that. So yes, we need to move towards zero waste. We need to be serious about that, but that should not stop us from stopping this very harmful practice of sending our trash to Chester and mm-hmm. making residents of Chester and Philadelphia sick.
And so what does it look like in city council as far as the political will? Do you have the votes to get this passed?
Well, I was disappointed the other day. I was hopeful that we could get the bill over the finish line at last Thursday's council session. And we were close, but we winded up being one vote shy. And so the members, I think, wanted more time with this. And so the strategy now is to work on some of the things that they asked about.
And what were those things?
So they want to hear more about the alternative solution. I think they just want to have a bit more confidence that we can absolutely send this to landfills. I know that to be true. We already did the mm-hmm. research. So if my council member colleagues need me to draw that out for them, then I will. I think the other biggest and harder sticking point was labor. You know, when I sat with ReWorld, I was very clear with them about this bill and my intention. I heard nothing about them needing to fire people at that meeting. And I met with them more than once. But after my bill passed out of committee, out of the Environment Committee initially, that's when ReWorld really stepped on the gas. They hired expensive lobbyists. They reached out to labor and they started actively and aggressively lobbying every city council member and making this an issue about the health of Chester and Philadelphia residents versus labor jobs. And we should be, you know, and that became a very big obstacle because labor is a good partner to city council. I believe in union labor, but I do not prioritize that over the health.
And I would just say we did invite ReWorld to be part of this conversation. They declined, but they did send a statement. I'm curious, though, what you're implying there in that response is that that there really aren't jobs at stake here, but they're using that as sort of an extortionary tactic to get what they want. I mean, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
So you don't think people will be fired?
I do not.
And those people would be located where? They'd be in the city of
Chester?
Are these
Chester residents?
No, the majority of those people are not Chester residents. There are 126 jobs at the incineration facility. I believe 26 of those jobs are Chester residents, and I don't believe that they are the union jobs. The majority of those skilled labor jobs are not for Chester residents.
Let me ask you, because you said another part of the pushback from the city council members is just about what the plan would be and firming that up going forward. So there's a difference between there being another place to put the trash in theory and then there being like an actual succession plan that goes into place immediately that makes sure there's no hiccups. And about 40 years ago, there was a horrible incident here in Philadelphia where they were sending incinerated ash to a place in New Jersey.
Okay.
New Jersey didn't want it anymore. It ended up on a barge that floated around the sea for literally more than a decade and ended up in Haiti. I think that might be somewhere in the background of these concerns, like making sure there's an actual plan, not just a theoretical plan. What can you do to assuage those concerns?
I'm going to bring more information to my council member colleagues. I know that there's another company that can take this contract, Republic. Advocates and members of our coalition have already interfaced with them. I know that they have capacity. I know that landfilling is a sound method to take care of our trash. We're already doing it with 60% of our trash. We can do it with the other 40%. But if my colleagues need to hear more about that, I am committed to this, and I will draw that out for them so that they understand the alternative better.
And what does the timeline look like? Because this contract ends, right? Is it June? I read. So, I mean, there's like, you only have a few months to get this done.
Yes, the contract ends June 30, I believe. And I'll also say, I mean, I also want to be clear about another one of the obstacles is that the Parker administration and sanitation is against this bill. And so I think that is another factor with...
on the record against or sort of behind the scenes
behind against? The scenes against.
Yeah.
Okay, so yes. you're so saying they've been lobbying, told you.
That you can check the reporting, the Inquirer reported, and I know to be true that there was a lobbying effort on behalf of the Parker administration against the bill as well, which is disappointing.
Why?
My sense is that, you know, I've talked to our clean and green director. I've talked to our sanitation commissioner. My sense is that, you know, they don't believe that this is harmful. It's like an ideological debate.
So not a labor debate. They just don't buy the evidence that it's harming the people of Chester.
They don't buy the evidence. But here's the thing. Mm-hmm. 7 years ago, before we got into this contract, this was an issue, the same issue. At that point, it was Councilmember Blondell Reynolds Brown that was taking this on. 7 years ago, sanitation said they need to study it more. They need to do a study to figure out whether this is harmful or not to Chester. They initiated that study when my bill passed out of committee. It's been 7 years. There's no more time to do an objective study about the harmful effects of this when Chester is crying out for this to stop, and all of their political leadership is.
Has there been any indication from the Park administration that she would veto this bill if it were passed, or has that sort of been silent on that particular question?
Silent. But, you know, I think that you can infer from the lobbying effort that that might be on the table for them.
Before we wrap up, Zulene Mayfield, I want to ask you, so what the council member is saying is that some members of the mayoral administration here in Philadelphia just don't buy that there's a real significant health effect to this facility. What would be your message to them?
We have clear-cut data on cancer and asthma rates. I can tell you that we are burying the people in Chester who have been exposed to the pollution from this incinerator. It is not an easy thing. It is scary. It makes us extremely angry that people don't think that we are being injured or hurt. You know, for some reason, Philadelphia has made a decision, because at one time they had incinerators in Philadelphia within the borders of Philly. And they made a decision that they would shut those incinerators down for health reasons and safety reasons. So why is the city of brotherly love so concerned for their constituents, their residents, and they want to have a continuation of this environmental racism that is causing environmental genocide in our community because it's comfortable? If ReWorld Covanta decided tomorrow to shut down, what would Philadelphia do with their garbage? So they want to hold millions of people, health, our health, at stake for 20 freaking union jobs.
Well, wow. that is the final word from Zulene Mayfield, activist with Chester Residents Concern for Quality of Living. Thank you so much for your time today on Studio 2.
Thank you all.
And let me also thank Councilmember Jamie Gauthier, who represents Philadelphia's 3rd Council District. Appreciate the time.
Thank you. I appreciate you so much for focusing on this.
Yes, thank you. And coming up on the other side of this break, we'll get a deeper dive into the impacts of incinerators. We'll also take a look at landfills, the alternative here, and see get some of the nuts and bolts of how those work. And our question for you, our listeners, what should Philadelphia do with its trash, incinerator, landfill, something else? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, keep those comments coming in the chat and we'll get to you after the break. Stick with us. Welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Today we're talking about the business of trash and the future of the Chester incinerator. At the top of the hour, we heard a little bit from Swarthmore College engineering professor Sintana Vergara. She joins us now again to walk through the pros and cons of incinerators versus landfills and look at other possible waste disposal options. Sintana, thanks for staying with us this hour and welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, and we still want to hear from you out there on the road, at home and elsewhere. Our question for you is this. What should Philadelphia do with its trash, incinerator, landfill, something else? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, put your comments in the chat.
Look, I don't think there's much scientific doubt that incineration has harmful side effects. But there's a comparison to be made here between the other main option, which is landfilling the waste. And we have a caller now, John from Bucks County, who I think wants to talk about this contrast. John, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Just my comment with, if you take the trash out of the transfer stations, Covanta and 58th Street, and send it to Chester, that's pretty quick. But when you send it out to a landfill, take more trucks, which is more pollution. Some trucks don't want to go to the landfill. There's a lot of issues with the landfill. There is certain licenses that you need, or permits, I should say. And the transfer stations where a lot of the trash goes after it's collected from the garbage men can only hold so much capacity. So you take away from one industry, like, let's say, Covanta, who they have a spot. They can only hold so much, but maybe a new guy comes along, his facility can't hold as much as that. So the trash will get backed up somewhere. Mm. And on top of that, it's going to be more costly to run these trucks out to the landfill. Mm. There's long wait times out there. They may have the capacity on the acres in the ground, but they might not have the capacity to take on that more trash once it gets there,
yeah,
as far as the machine to push it.
Thank you, John.
So there's all things Yep.
Yeah, lots of things to consider. Thanks, John. Look, this is difficult to do some sort of like easy one-to-one comparison, right, Sintana, to say landfill is better than incinerator. So let's look at some of the variables at play here. Why would one conclude that landfilling is better for environmental and human health than incineration? And are there situations where that's straight up not true?
Yeah, that's a great question. So landfilling and incineration are completely different technologies. We can think of a landfill essentially as a large plastic bag. We put a lot of trash in it, we close it up, and we try to make sure that nothing gets out into the environment or to people. So basically, you have very slow decomposition in this plastic bag. It's not a great long-term solution, but we kind of keep things inside. Incineration is kind of the opposite. We put waste in and it is almost instantaneously combusted. And a lot of what's in the waste has now become air pollution. We can capture a lot of it, but we can't capture all of it. So a bunch of it ends up being breathed in by us and in our natural environment. So they are quite different. But in terms of public health impact, I don't think there's much question that the impact of combustion, of incineration for people is much more serious than
even if
than
you factor people. In the distance that the trucks might have to travel to a faraway landfill. And this is specific to this case, right? Mm-hmm. Chester just happens to be quite close to Philadelphia. You know, there are landfills that are much further away and we don't know exactly where this trash would go. But even when you factor that in, could you conclusively say incineration is worse for human health?
I would still say yes. We could, of course, do a careful study here. But the pollutants that are emitted by a truck are different than pollutants that are emitted by an incinerator, because an incinerator is burning trash. So you're going to get things like heavy metals and dioxins that you're not going to get out of a truck. Mm-hmm. So that's one. Number two, when these trucks are traveling down the highway, they are creating pollution, of course. That pollution is mostly getting dispersed all along the path. Whereas when you have a non-mobile source like an incinerator, all of that pollution is of course, it's traveling, but it's staying mostly close to that point where there are a lot of people.
And by the way, we did ask ReWorld to be on the show and they sent us a statement. And one of the things that they really talked about was the fact that this, you know, the incineration was creating renewable energy through electricity that powers 51,000 homes annually. I just want to get your reaction to that portion of it. There is electricity being generated from, yes, there's pollutants, but there's this good thing, right? With electricity, does that offset some of the bad things that are happening with regard to this incinerator? Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the environmental benefits of incineration, of producing that electricity, kind of depend on where we would get our electricity otherwise. So in Pennsylvania, that's mostly natural gas and that's nuclear. In terms of, what was your question again?
My question was, does it offset at all? The fact that they're creating this renewable energy through electricity, they're using the trash to create electricity, does that offset the pollution that is coming from the combustion?
Yeah, so I think those are two different questions. We have an environmental benefit from the electricity production, but we have a public health cost of the incineration.
Let me read in a couple more comments. Anne says, how about if government levies taxes on manufacturers commensurate with the amount of waste their product produces? What we are doing now is not sustainable. Mm-hmm. David from Vineland, New Jersey says he lived in Germany for some time and wish we would handle waste management more like them. They separate their trash much better and yes, even use incinerators. So from what I've read, Sintana, incinerators are actually quite common in Europe, different geography, different topography there. So there's lots of different reasons for that. But is there a world in which incineration actually is pretty safe?
Great question. So incineration is popular among countries, mostly in Northern Europe, but also Japan, that have a few things in common. So they have a lot of money. They have a lot of technical capacity to run this engineered system. They have the money to invest in these very good pollution controls to try to make it as clean as possible. And they don't have space. So they basically don't have another option. They can't use landfills. So there are not very many countries in the world that have all of those things, but those are the conditions under which we've seen incineration get at least some more public acceptance.
And so is that have to do with how trash is separated on the front side? You said there's more technical capacity or they have certain methods for making it cleaner, but like what are those methods and why couldn't they be reproduced here?
Great. So yeah, two different parts of that question. So one is on the separation. So if you take a country like Germany or Denmark, Denmark especially incinerates a lot. They do a really amazing job with source separation. So mm-hmm. they separate out all of their recyclables, you know, before it would get to an incinerator, for example. And they're optimizing recycling and reuse. I lost the thread again. I'm so sorry. What was the second part?
Why couldn't we do it here? And I guess the question is, I guess you sort of answered it, right? Which is that we don't have systems that do that effectively, the sort of sorting that you're talking about.
Right. And also they're very expensive, right? It's very expensive to invest in the pollution controls to make sure that what's coming out of the stack is as clean as possible. So in Europe, they have very high environmental regulations, and those countries have a lot of money to invest in those environmental controls. And we haven't seen that here.
Yeah. Let's bring in another caller. We have Greg from Newark, Delaware on the line. Greg, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
I have a comment. I think the cause of all the, you know, whether we recycle or burn the trash or landfill it is we are consumers. We're taught to be consumers in this country, and we throw everything away after using it one time. There's single-use plastics that I think should be outlawed. There's problems with recycling. People think that if it has a triangle on it, it's recyclable. That's not true. Ones and twos are the things that are most recyclable. Six, the styrofoams, you can't recycle those easily.
Yeah.
So if we had selective recycling so they could separate out the things that would burn more cleanly, that might be a better way of supplying fuel for plants that generate power.
Yeah. Thank you. That's Greg on the line. Thank you so much. We had MJ who says we should be encouraging less consumerism, packaging that biodegrades and more recycling, repurposing, buy less stuff. So MJ agrees with what Greg had to say. And so, Santana, I do wonder about landfills, some of the downsides to landfills. You talked about there being this huge plastic bag or whatever. Does anything typically escape? And then I wonder if there's any renewable energy that can be extracted from the waste that's kept in this plastic bag.
Yes. So what comes out of the plastic bag is captured. So basically, we try to have liners underneath a landfill that capture what's called leachate, which is like trash juice that percolates through the landfill. And then we have gases that are produced during decomposition. So things like carbon dioxide and methane. And all modern landfills are going to collect that gas. And the methane is the same as natural gas, so that can be collected and used for electricity.
Mm-hmm. And I do have a follow-up for that. Like how, because a big part of the conversation about Chester is the people living in close proximity to this incinerator, they're, you know, directly affected. How about people living near near landfills? If people live near landfills, could the waste go into groundwater or have other effects on those communities?
That's a great question. It is possible. However, there are a lot of redundant systems designed in an engineered landfill that basically prevent any intrusion of leachate into groundwater. And there's strict monitoring schemes that also need to occur. So it is possible that there are effects, but they're very tightly controlled and monitored. I would say some effects of living near a landfill might have more to do with the trucks that are coming to the landfill and air quality concerns with those. Typically, landfills are sited farther away from people, though, in rural areas.
And does it smell bad? Because I'm wondering that was a big question that we asked Zulene, and she says it's horrible there. And I wonder, I've never been to a landfill. I wonder what it's like there.
Yeah, the working face of a landfill, so that where they're putting today's trash, is definitely smelly. At the end of every day, there's a cap put on top of whatever is there. And part of the idea is to keep smells and animals away.
Joe from Bristol, Pennsylvania, asks about sanitizing and compressing trash and then using that to build buildings. Walter brings up the example of Chicago. He says Chicago gets rid of its trash with an anaerobic digester. I guess blue sky here. What are some of the potential technological solutions to dealing with waste that don't involve landfilling or incineration? Do they exist? Are they workable? Are they scalable? We only have about a minute left.
Yes. Okay. So I think first of all, we have to address consumption before we get into our dream technologies that can solve all of our problems. Many, many people who called in talked about this. Our consumption in the United States has tripled since 1960. We produce more waste than anyone else in the world. So that's our major, major big problem. Then the second thing we should do for the waste that we do produce, we need to be able to separate waste. Trash is only trash if it's all mixed together. If we're able to separate it, paper separate from food, for example, that paper can be recycled. That food can be composted. And then we're moving more towards a circular waste management system where we're really just recovering resources. And in terms of technologies, we have lots of them. If we're able to separate our waste into like pieces, then, you know, the organic waste then becomes an input into a composting process or an anaerobic digestion process. The paper can be recycled. So we have lots of technologies that are able to recover resources from our waste if we're able to separate them.
But it starts with buying less stuff. Thank you so much, Cintana Vergara, who is an assistant professor of engineering at Swarthmore College and studies how to manage waste. Appreciate your time today on Studio 2.
Thank you for having me.
And by the way, I have to read this comment from Judy, who says, I'm a township supervisor and I'm having a hard time understanding how the township of Chester would allow a trash incinerator to be built without alerting the residents and reviewing the zoning. The township officials should have been there to protect the residents. Hopefully that has changed. By the way, I want to say thank you so much to our producers, Debbie Builder, Andreas Coates, and Hazel May Bryan. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calique engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. Also, I'm Cherry Gregg.
Oh, yeah. And I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron. How about that? We'll talk to you tomorrow.